question is just, you know, very basically, why, beginning with the concept of the full spectrum masculine as one of the elements of this workshop, why do you feel that this theme or this area of inquiry is of special importance at this time?
Well, we decided to do this theme for this conference as a follow-up, as a natural follow-up to last year. And it wasn't just last year's conference with SAMS that had the theme of the full spectrum of the feminine and a way of looking at the renaissance of the sacred feminine, with most of the emphasis on the way we understand the feminine principle in the world today and the importance of for that returning to our awareness now. Well, pretty much everything else I've been involved with, other than the SAMS conference, has been associated with the feminine. But as a natural follow-up to the emphasis on the feminine, it would seem to be important that we include the way in which the masculine is evolving, is expanding, is in gaining more awareness at this point. The expression, the full spectrum of the masculine, an alternate word we could use is the awakened masculine, and built into those words are the idea that there's way more than just one type of masculine. And then number two, that the masculine can actually also be a principle that can match and have its own contribution to the way in which the world is unfolding, hopefully guided by the sacred feminine. And this actually takes me back to what I researched in the early 1980s. I actually have some articles that I wrote at that point regarding the full spectrum of the masculine. So this has actually been an integral part of the shamanic astrology approach for a long time, just as there is so many authentic expressions of the feminine principle. Well, the same thing is true for the masculine. And a lot of attention has been placed by me and by some other members of the school to really flesh out the authentic expressions of the masculine that are beyond the current culture's version of what they think the masculine is supposed to be. I mean, there's a great deal of confusion today about what the masculine is supposed to be. And for certain, what we have to do is go beyond the culturally relative concepts around gender. I think probably as an overall project, both last year's conference and this year's conference are designed to give us some tools to actually envision a post-gender world, which is not to eradicate masculine and feminine, but to live in a world that is not at the control of, being under the control of, or at the effect of the any particular culture's version of what masculinity and femininity is. So it's really a way to balance out. That is to say, why are we doing a conference that includes looking at the full spectrum of the masculine, is because we want to balance it out a little bit more than maybe men in the world today are available, open, and interested in seeing of a post-culturally relative view of masculinity that can actually match and collaborate with and be in cooperation with the way the feminine principle is evolving at this point.
That's great.
So that's the reason. It's just really to balance out the emphasis on the feminine with the masculine, and this idea that there are a whole host of different authentic expressions of the masculine is not as well known out there as the way that recently the feminine principle has been expanded on. I mean, now most everybody has heard about the solar feminine, or about the Amazon, or about the priestess, or about the Shakti woman, different expressions of the feminine that are beyond the culturally approved roles. but there's less work that has been done regarding the masculine. I could just mention here that I have just written an article in the next issue of the newsletter regarding this issue, that we're actually moving the discussion beyond some of the better ways of understanding the full spectrum of the masculine that comes from people like Thomas Moore and Robert Moore and Douglas Gillette, who look at the look at the masculine principle as being fourfold. It's the king, it's the priest, it's the lover, and the warrior. And certainly those are four of them, but our view is that there's certainly more than those four. What about the partner? What about the shaman? What about father? I mean, so what we tried to do is we've looked at 12 authentic expressions of the masculine principle, and to also perceive them not as static, but they're in a process of becoming. They're evolving into forms that are fresh and new. We can be inspired by the old stories. However, these particular archetypes of the masculine are dancing and shifting and changing into different forms at this point. Now, this is all what I'm sharing here is a sort of sweeping philosophical overview on it. But to be very practical, what we're looking at primarily is Mars, the position of Mars. And on a man's chart, the position of Mars will refer to what version of masculinity is the intent in the current life. Doesn't mean that's how a man is, but it's like a set of instructions. That's what he's here to investigate. And then for a woman, Mars would refer at first to what she's looking for on the outside. It's like a projection. It's a longing, looking outside of ourselves for wholeness. And then in the second part of our conference is about the inner sacred marriage process, and that involves women integrating and incorporating that Mars position internally, and as the female version of the sacred marriage, just as for men, it would be their integration and bringing into wholeness inside their Venus position.
So, Daniel, I know you've articulated this in the Shamanic Astrology Handbook, but as time has gone on, what I'm getting to is just how do you articulate the essential nature of the masculine?
In the most recent writings, I first of all strip away any culturally relative views of the masculine. That's the first step. Secondly, we avoid the equation of masculinity with men and femininity with women.
Right.
So there's a separation between the concepts of masculinity and femininity, and directly relating it to men and women. When you remove the great number of culturally relative views of gender, actually what you're faced with is the fact that the difference between men and women is that men are XY chromosome beings, human beings, and women are XX chromosome beings, which then will produce the obvious genital differences between men and women. But in my opinion, literally everything else is up in the air. And this is represented, for example, by the work of David Data, who has this rather interesting view that the masculine and the feminine are in a three-stage process of development, where stage one are the normal traditional roles that the more recent culture has projected onto men and women. Stage two would be where men learn about emotions and feelings and sensitivity from women, and then women learn about masculinity from sort of warrior, sort of dominant attributes they might get from men. This is what we call stage two, which for women is called the corporate Amazon, and for men it's called the wimpy new age male.
Right.
But then stage three in that body of knowledge is all up in the air, and that nobody really knows. It's dancing into something new, and that particular line of psychological unfoldment is kind of stuck at a cul-de-sac, and the reason being they're trying to make it, and this is like the biggest problem with this issue in the world today, which is they're trying to make it look like men. And we can say, like, if we could come up with a definition of masculinity, well, then all men would be like that.
Right.
Or the same thing for women, that, if we could say women should be playing a certain approach, this is what women are, this is what femininity is, well, then it's putting everyone into that one category, and I'm sorry, that's just not the way it is. I use an expression right now, which is both giving credit, but also being somewhat critical, which is to say, it's not men are from Mars, women are from Venus, but rather it's the 12 men from Mars or the 12 women from Venus. In other words, there's different authentic expressions of the full spectrum of the feminine and the masculine that are all in the process of becoming. But I always love to quote the words of Elizabeth Diebold, who writes in what used to be called the magazine Age of Enlightenment, What is Enlightenment, where she basically says that men and women have far more in common. They're both expressions of what a human being is. And so this sort of battle or war about, you know, what is masculine and what is feminine needs to come to an end. And it's not by coming up with some magic bullet new definition of masculinity and femininity, but by valuing all the authentic expressions of both men and women through the Venus and Mars positions that we're looking at. So, for example, if a woman had Venus in Aries, which is one of the Amazon positions, that's a solar feminine. Basically, it refers to the feminine principle that on first glance might look more masculine. And meanwhile, we could look at a man with Mars in Cancer. Well, he may have masculine characteristics that at first glance, based on culturally relative concepts from our culture, would say, well, he's more feminine than a lot of women.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to just basically answer your question and say at this stage, if anybody claims they know what essential masculinity is and how and apply that across the board to men, or what essential femininity is and apply that across the board to women, they're not really being honest or looking clearly at what's actually happening in the world. It's not a useful approach.
Let's say masculine principle, feminine principle.
Yes? You're asking a question?
Yeah.
I mean, how would I define that?
Mm-hmm.
The way that at this stage, if kind of reducing it all down,
mm-hmm.
just like we reduced men and women to XX and XY. we could reduce masculine and feminine archetypally
mm-hmm.
as principles to a way by way of using an understanding of fire and air, water and earth. which are, you know, very core concepts in astrology. So again, we're not thinking of men and women, we're thinking of now fire, air, water, and earth. So therefore, if a human being has a lot of fire and air, they're on a more archetypally masculine journey. If a woman, if a man or a woman has more earth and water, then they are more on a archetypally feminine journey. And this could be understood in the following way. Fire and air represent principles of thinking, consciousness, and its movement is from matter and earth, kind of up and out. It's going up and out. And then, again, not men, I'm talking about masculine principle. And then the earth and water is the bringing of spirit, consciousness, into matter, into the body, in, including emotions, into the feelings function, and so on. So it's like one journey, the masculine journey could be called the journey of evolution, up and out, and the feminine principle could be considered the journey of involution, spirit and consciousness into matter, into the body, into the earth. One is not better than the other. They basically are mutually supportive. They're reciprocal with each other. And some men are on the more feminine archetypal journey, and some women are on the more masculine archetypal journey. So there's a certain way of perceiving that. That's about as close as I can take it using an astrological context. I mean, there's numerous other ways of looking at this as far as the original cosmology, the whole story of the masculine and the feminine historically with matriarchy and patriarchy, but that's a whole larger story. Break it down into an astrological context, we can see it in the four elements that have always been perceived of as being the complements of masculine and feminine, where two of the elements are masculine and two of them are feminine.
Okay. And so when you, in the Shamanic Astrology Handbook or otherwise, use, I think the Jungian concept of the masculine being the sword quality.
Sure. I'd love to comment on that. I mean, when we're looking at the 12 versions of masculinity, and then we say, okay, 12 ways of applying that to men. So again, we're connecting the masculine principle with the 12 gods or the 12 type of men.
Yeah.
Well, I like to use Jung's definition of masculinity. Jung at one point said, masculinity means to know your sword and to know how to use it. Know your sword and to know how to use it. Now, let's for a moment imagine that we're not on any level talking about a purely martial war image, but let's just reduce it to what XY chromosome being. So to know your sword, it would be like we could say the 12 different ways that a man could feel his aliveness, his phallic potency, his feeling of being powerful. I don't mean power over others, but to feel his essential nature as a source of aliveness and power. Okay, so the 12 Mars positions will describe that. For example, Mars and Aries, to know your sword and to know how to use it could be like, wow, I'd be really turned on because I won the starting quarterback job, or because I was the number one salesman this month. Okay. While a guy with Mars in Cancer, his source of aliveness and phallic potency is the fact that, God, I love my kids, and I just love providing nourishment to them, and they just love me loving on them. And that would be a very different kind of thing. And then say Mars in Libra, then it would be, how is the guy doing in his relationship, and is he being valued for the fact that he brings to the relationship potentially even more than the woman gives back? You know, in other words, he's valued for his capacity to be a good partner. So we can look at the 12 different gods that way. Each of them has a completely different domain of attention from which he could know his sword and then ultimately know how to use it well.
Right.
And so what this is doing, of course, this is adding far more emphasis on the core idea here. Well, there's not just one way. Mm-hmm. There's like all these different authentic expressions of the masculine, just as we've discussed and shared and been a central feature of the shamanic astrology teaching for a while about how that applies to women and the goddesses.
Right. Well, I guess my main question is for people who are both new to shamanic astrology as well as people who have been following you, what would you say that they would learn from or about the sacred marriage that might be new, different, you know, reinforcing? I mean, what benefits will they have from coming around the sacred marriage?
Well, you know, for a lot of years, Linda, the sacred marriage intensive was put in the category of one of the more advanced workshops. You know, you had to have the script and archetype and the timeline and all of that before you could do the sacred marriage one, which includes all the relationship material. However, over the last number of years, I'd say the sacred marriage material is the most popular feature, that the most useful feature that comes out of the paradigm. So I've been looking at ways of making it easily accessible without being, you know, technically proficient in looking at a chart. And that's the way we're looking at Venus and Mars in an opposite way. So, like, you have the 12 Mars positions on a man's chart representing what version of masculinity he came in to explore. But then for women, it would be an amazingly useful clue as to what to work on internally herself. And I think some of the talks that are being planned and some of the experiential activities that we have are designed to demonstrate how easy it is, just by knowing Venus and Mars, to know what to work on within yourself to gain wholeness. And also to actually, if you're interested in making a relationship work better, well, it's going to work there too. But the more important thing is, just by these simple clues that are on the chart, to be able to develop the inner wholeness, whether or not we're with anyone or not, or whether or not the relationship is healthy or not. The idea being, we gain our wholeness and we're not in the shade of projecting those qualities on the person we're with. A recent article, actually I guess it came out in the last newsletter, is on this particular subject. Just by knowing Venus or Mars, not your own, not women's Venus, but a man's Venus, and knowing a woman's Mars position, some very simple little expressions about how you can do that inner work of wholeness, of gaining wholeness.
Will there be, Daniel, will there be, like, new insights, you know, from what, if people have taken the sacred marriage and relationship workshop, will there be new material?
Yes. Actually, At this point, it's the sacred marriage material that is going through the greatest amount of organic growth recently. That's what I'm really excited to share during the keynotes that I'm going to be doing, as well as assisting in the experiential presentations of this material. Most of the workshops that I'm giving around the world right now, outside of the school intensives, if I'm doing a two-day workshop, if I'm doing a three-day workshop, if I'm doing an evening talk, I'm never not talking about the sacred marriage process. It's the thing that is most up for people at this point, in my view. And there is a lot of evolving new material that is going to come, which is why we can do it in this workshop.
Well, this isn't something, a question we had planned or anything, but mm-hmm. you know, how, because you work with so many people to introduce them to, you know, their inner masculine, inner feminine, how do you think that this information transforms people's lives? How does it affect them and change them to know this information they didn't have before?
Well, the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School, what makes it a mystery school is that it is blending the more practical and mundane advantages that come from knowing astrology with the quest for self-realization, wholeness, enlightenment, the fulfillment of our original intent. There's so many different ways you could express that. So the goal is really to create an approach to understanding and living our lives that combines the best of psychology and the best of spirituality. So the inner sacred marriage process, whilst definitely being of value for the more practical and mundane areas of life, more fundamentally gives us astrological clues for the development of inner wholeness, and inner wholeness is one of the aspects that is connected to great mystery. It always reminds me of that great quote from Jung: "What we are not looking for perfection, we are looking for wholeness," and that's really what this process does, even though some might say, well, I want to do the sacred marriage because I can't find happiness in an external relationship, or I want to do the sacred marriage in order to help get a great relationship. That's all fine. We could even say, though, that it's beyond just being able to be successful in relationship. The inner sacred marriage process covers all other areas of life also. It assists with self-love. It assists with health. It assists with confidence in the world. It assists in developing our intuition. It assists in never feeling alone, things like that, because basically we've established this inner contact point with the other part of our soul that we always thought was out there somewhere. Mm-hmm. So it's fundamental. It's foundational. I would say that the inner sacred marriage process is the closest thing in the shamanic astrology paradigm to the higher mysteries. Hmm. And you've always heard me say that astrology is the highest of the lower mysteries, you know. Mm-hmm. And the higher mysteries include things like how do we actually get self-love? What is the nature of grace? What is the process of self-realization? Things like that. The gaining of this some connection, you know, making progress of getting clues about this inner sacred marriage process is probably the best use of astrology that I'm aware of in order to actually get closer to the higher mysteries.
Mm.